This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For so many years, the Christian right and other anti-abortion constituencies made overturning Roe v. Wade their goal, their endgame. And with 3 appointments to the Supreme Court, Donald Trump delivered to those voters. Even still, overturning Roe flat out is a line that the court may not be ready to cross. Instead, anti-abortion forces have devised a strategy of undermining Roe. The Texas abortion law, Senate Bill 8, is already being studied by other states, and the Supreme Court is reviewing a separate law in Mississippi that also bans abortions before fetal viability. It seems entirely possible now that American women could lose reproductive choice in nearly every Republican-controlled state, Roe or no Roe. Jeannie Sook Gerson is a professor of law at Harvard University and a contributing writer for The New Yorker. She recently spoke with Leah Littman, who teaches constitutional law at the University of Michigan Law School.
So, Leah, last week in a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court refused to stop Senate Bill 8, or SB 8, from going into effect. What's in that Texas law?
So the big part that is substantive of the Texas law is it says abortions performed more than 6 weeks after a person's last period are prohibited. What is quite novel about the law is it allows anyone, literally anyone in Texas, to sue either an abortion provider who performs an abortion on someone more than 6 weeks after their last period, or to sue anyone who assists a person in obtaining an abortion more than 6 weeks after their last period.
So this idea of giving private citizens the power to enforce the law is part of what makes SB 8 so unusual. Typically, when someone thinks a law is unconstitutional, they can sue the official who's responsible for enforcing that law in order to keep them from enforcing it. Then the courts get to decide whether that law is unconstitutional. And that is what is happening with the Mississippi case that's going before the Supreme Court.
Yes, that's exactly right. The Mississippi law prohibits abortion providers from performing abortions after a certain time period. In Mississippi, after 15 weeks from a person's last period. The abortion providers sued the state officials, and they asked the lower courts to prevent those state officials from enforcing what they argued was an unconstitutional law. And the lower federal courts agreed with them.
So let's talk about the Texas law. The way that it was structured was not normal in the way that the Mississippi law was. What about it is kind of crafty?
So both Texas and Mississippi prohibit abortions after a certain point. But Mississippi says if an abortion provider violates that statute, the state, that is some state official, will bring a lawsuit against the abortion provider. Texas, however, said no state official can bring a lawsuit against the abortion provider. Only private citizens can. And so whereas the abortion providers in Mississippi were able to file a case in federal court naming the person who they knew would enforce the law against them, the state official, that wasn't a possibility in Texas because Texas said no state official will enforce this law, only potentially any number of private citizens, and you don't know which ones. And so that made it hard for the abortion providers to pick who they would actually sue.
So then abortion providers did sue, and they named various state officials and a private party, and we saw that case go to the Supreme Court. but the Supreme Court refused to stop the Texas law from going into effect, 5-4. How would you describe what the Supreme Court did here?
I would describe it as absolutely stunning. You know, when faced with a law that in practice and in practical effect was going to end abortion access in the state, the Supreme Court said, yeah, just do it, and proceeded to write an order that said, look, we're not actually analyzing the constitutionality of this law. We are not saying anything about Roe versus Wade. They just said, look, there are these procedural questions in the case that give us enough pause that we're not going to stop the law from going into effect. And that, to my mind, allows them to give the states exactly what they want, banning abortion while evading accountability. And it also allows the Supreme Court to kind of do the same thing. That is, the Supreme Court has, in effect, allowed states to practically end access to abortion while at the same time insisting that they're not overruling Roe versus Wade or Planned Parenthood versus Casey. They're not weighing in on whether this Texas law is constitutional. So they, too, are, I think, trying to avoid accountability and public scrutiny for what they did and what they allowed to happen in this case.
But it kind of, I have to say, it kind of points up the absurdity the whole system.
I mean, like, the doctrines that Texas is manipulating, I think, are completely wrong. Like, I think you should just be able to sue the state of Texas and say, you passed an unconstitutional law, like, courts declare it invalid. I think the idea that courts don't actually declare laws invalid and instead just enjoin particular state officials from enforcing them is this insane formalistic theory that was only ever offered and developed in order to justify laws like this. Like, it's all a house of cards.
Right, exactly. It's just a maze that gets you nowhere. The more I think about it and talk about it with you, it seems like the Texas law is like it's an onion with layers upon layers of unconstitutionality, right? There's the substantive core, which is about Roe versus Wade and the violation of that abortion precedent. But then the insulation from judicial review itself is unconstitutional. It just seems like things are just tied up here and tied up there really tight in order to essentially challenge the authority of the courts. It's not just about abortion. It's about basically saying to the courts, you are cut out of this. Was there a mastermind behind all of these mechanisms? Really, that there are several different kinds of mechanisms coming together. Do you think there was a mastermind?
I do. And I don't think I'm alone in that. So it has been reported that someone named Jonathan Mitchell, who's actually a former Solicitor General of Texas, that is the lawyer charged with defending the states and the representing the state in court, was advising the legislature and had been basically spelling out this theory about how to make it impossible to challenge a law in court in a series of academic articles. So he has also taught at several law schools in the United States. So this is really his brainchild and the brainchild of other people he was working with. And they concocted this scheme that would, again, allow Texas in substance to make it impossible to perform abortions and then make it impossible to challenge that law in court. That was the entire design of the law. That was what all of their arguments were geared toward. And that was what they were trying to do.
So, Leah, I think there's quite a bit of confusion out there about exactly what the Supreme Court's decision last week means. Because some people are saying Roe versus Wade has been overturned. Some people are saying that it will certainly be overturned. And others are suggesting that there's no way now to challenge the constitutionality of this law. So first of all, how can the constitutionality of this law be challenged given this novel mechanism that makes it really hard to prevent its going into effect? Now, we know it is in effect. So what is the next step?
I think one troubling possibility is there might not be a way to challenge it. And I say that because abortion providers in Texas have stopped performing abortions on people more than 6 weeks after their last period. So there aren't going to be lawsuits to enforce the Texas law. That is, there aren't going to be private citizens filing suits against abortion providers for violating the law because abortion providers are no longer performing abortions more than 6 weeks after people's last period.
So, Leah, so far, we've been talking about scenarios in which the law hasn't gone into effect yet, and it's being challenged before it goes into effect. But traditionally, laws can be challenged after they go into effect. So here, we do have a law that has gone into effect, and abortion providers could provide abortions and be sued under the law, and then use that as the vehicle to challenge the law as unconstitutional by saying, I'm defending myself, and I'm not liable because the law is unconstitutional. Isn't that another way to challenge this law?
It is possible, but I actually think that's pretty unlikely here. And one reason for that is the law itself, in addition to authorizing $10,000 in damages against an abortion provider, also allows a court to issue what's called an injunction, basically a federal court prohibition that you can't engage in certain conduct against any defendant. So an abortion provider is risking not just monetary liability, but potentially being put under the supervision of the Texas state court system in what abortions they can perform and what they cannot. So the risks of liability are much greater than just a $10,000 damages award. And it's also possible that people in Texas might not want to be the person who has the abortion performed and is the test case for this law that would attract considerable publicity and attention on them. Some people might not want, you know, to be the face of abortion rights in the United States. So there are many incentives in this case that weigh against, I think, abortion providers actually being able to find or bring a test case and challenge the law that way.
So what other options are there for challenging the law?
The United States, that is the federal government, could sue some possible defendants in order to try to get a court to strike down this law. The Department of Justice has floated the possibility that they would rely on a federal law known as the FACE Act, which basically prohibits people from intimidating those who seek to get abortions. And maybe the federal government will bring a lawsuit saying Texas officials or people enforcing this law are violating the FACE Act. So some federal lawsuit is also a possibility.
It just is so frustrating. The more you explain it, the wilder it seems.
We haven't even gotten to some of the most wild procedural aspects of this law, because another reason why there might not be a test case is a provision in the law says, even if a lower court enjoins the Texas law, that is, if a lower court says the law can't be enforced, and a later court says, no, it actually can be enforced, abortion providers can be sued for abortions they perform after a court said this law is invalid. So there too, the law exposes abortion providers to a ton of potential liability, even if the law is initially struck down and then later upheld by this Supreme Court. So the law itself creates all of these procedures to make it impossible to challenge the law and put these abortion providers out of business.
So at the end of the day, what you're saying is that abortion providers are facing a choice of cutting their losses and not challenging the Texas law further or risk losing everything. Am I getting that right?
Yes, I think that is the choice that they are put to.
You can read Jeannie Sook Gerson on the Texas Law SB8 at NewYorker.com. She spoke with Leah Littman, an assistant professor at the University of Michigan Law School.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.